The broadcast of the reading of the Richmond Times-Dispatch on the Virginia Voice is made possible thanks to the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Saturday, April the 20th, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Becky Emmett for the Virginia Voice, and we'll have about 25 minutes of front page and local news, followed by about 25 minutes of news from the Nation and World section. After that, we'll have a half hour of editorials, columnists, and letters to the editor from the opinions pages. Our final half hour will have the obituaries, remainder of any letters to the editor, and more news as time allows. I'll start us off with the weather report. The Times-Dispatch carries Richmond's four-day forecast. Today, mostly cloudy and warmer. Winds of 6 to 12 miles per hour, with a high of 73. Tonight, it will be partly cloudy, with the same kinds of winds and a low of 46. Tomorrow, Sunday, cooler with clouds and sun, wind of 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 60, a low of 43. Monday, we'll have some clouds, we'll have sun, and more of the same wind, 67 degrees high and 43 at night. Tuesday will be mostly sunny and nice with winds of 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 70, and a low of 49. Let's go now to your readers for today, Steve Bush and Ginny Meeks.
Thank you, Becky. Good morning. I'm Steve Bush for Virginia Voice.
And I'm Ginny Meeks.
Our first article from today's front page is New Law Bans Glock Switches. Police Aim to Seize Modified Handguns by Luca Powell of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. This pistol spits like a rattlesnake. It's wild and inaccurate, even in the hands of an expert officer from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. It's a handgun like any other, unless you count the plastic prop that has been used to modify it. The street name for this little addition is a Glock switch or auto sear. Its official name is machine gun conversion device, which gives a pretty clear picture of what this sliver of plastic does. By any name, switches are deadly, as ATF agents demonstrated for a reporter with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. They turn killing tools into weapons of war and drive up numbers of senseless woundings and killings across Virginia. At the Richmond Police Department's training facility, ATF officers fired both modified and unmodified Glock pistols at practice targets. A timer illustrates the change in rate of fire. A normal semi-automatic pistol can fire 10 rounds in 2.61 seconds, as fast as the shooter can flex their trigger finger. A converted gun sprints through a 10-bullet magazine in 0.41 seconds. The recoil causes the gun to climb, so while a first bullet might be accurate, the remaining nine fire wildly. "Let's be real," said the officer, whose name ATF asked be withheld. "It's spray and pray." In 2022, Richmond police seized 12 pistols modified with Glock switches. Last year, police took 18. Richmond Police Chief Rick Edwards rarely misses an opportunity to remind the city. "They turn the most popular and common firearm in America, the one I'm carrying right now, and turn it into a machine gun," Edwards said in his January crime briefing. ATF Special Agent M. Darrell Logwood says guns pop up on social media platforms like Instagram. On live streams, gun owners flaunt their jerry-rigged guns. "They carry an implied threat," Logwood said. "Switches have become status symbols," he said. "I've seen posts online where people are saying, 'Don't come at me, I've got a switch.'" That's how Richmond police found Karel Malik Boone in May 2022. Boone is serving 21 months in federal prison for waving a converted Glock in an Instagram live video filmed from Richmond's Whitcomb Court neighborhood. The gun had an extended magazine, and one prolonged pull of the trigger, it could have fired off 33 bullets. As far as police know, it was not ever fired, and Boone was charged only for possessing it. But the gun was traced to an armed robbery that occurred 2 weeks before Boone's arrest. Boone was prosecuted locally and then again by the Department of Justice, where lawyers asked the judge to consider the simultaneously deadly and innocuous nature of a semi-automatic firearm converted into a fully automatic one. Court records do not indicate how Booth got the switch. That same month, Richmond police arrested Xantius Tyler, who managed the YouTube channel Hood Gunsmith, according to court records. Tyler was making his own switches as well as ordering higher-end metal switches from a company in China before selling them via mail, authorities said. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Last February, police arrested Daquan Lane, who admitted to being en route to sell a converted pistol for $750. Lane was also spotted on social media and is now serving 2 years in prison. Devices take minutes to make. Logwood, the ATF officer, says switches are disturbingly easy to make. With a 3D printer from Amazon and an easily downloadable schematic, a layman can print a switch in a matter of minutes. In 2020, Fairfax police arrested 20-year-old David Sungar, an ROTC student at George Mason University, for doing exactly that. Police who raided Sungar's home after he sold guns to undercover detectives found a $300 3D printer, charging documents show. Sungar was offering the detectives machine gun conversion devices as a free add-on if the officers bought one of his homemade AR-15s for $2,000. Sungar's defense attorney asked a federal judge for leniency. In court records, his lawyer wrote that selling guns allowed Sungar to become the big man on campus. David became excited about what he was doing from his own interest in firearms as a longtime hobbyist and the support he received by dealing in the dark side of the Second Amendment community buried in the underbelly of the internet, said defense attorney Peter D. Greenspun. What disturbs Logwood is just how easy it is to get into the business. The amount of plastic product that it takes to print that? It's pennies, said Logwood, gesturing to a switch the size of a thumbnail. On the streets, he thinks a switch can fetch as much as $150. Sungar sold his for $50. Police sometimes do not even realize they have picked up a modified gun, Logwood said, since the conversion component is hidden behind a gun's back panel or slide. There are plenty of law enforcement officers who would not recognize one, he said. They would find this and not even know it. Machine guns were banned by Congress in 1935. Their return comes as the internet technology and dated gun laws allow for switches to flourish. Laws have moved, albeit slowly. Switches have been illegal under federal law for years, but states took longer to catch up. It was only in the 2024 legislative session that switches became illegal to possess in Virginia. The law updated an older law that only made it illegal to possess what are known as trigger activation devices. Now, both are illegal, and Commonwealth's attorneys will be able to charge and try cases as soon as July 1st, when the law takes effect. And that article from today's front page was, New Law Bans Glock Switches, Police Aim to Seize Modified Handguns, by Luca Powell of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Ginny?
Thank you very much, Steve. And our next front page article about public housing, RRHA to halt evictions for at least 30 days. And it's by Dave Ress of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Richmond's housing agency is putting a freeze on evictions from public housing communities for at least 30 days while staff members recheck rents and arrears calculations that tenants and legal aid lawyers have said are incorrect. The Richmond Redevelopment and Housing Authority has dismissed 14 eviction cases and put a freeze on other cases while it takes first steps toward eviction, said Kenyatta Green, the agency's senior vice president. RRHA is also not filing any new cases during the freeze, she said. It's great that the RRHA is halting evictions and stopping legal action, but they should have been doing it all along, said Michaela Ross, a senior attorney with the legal aid justice system. The pause on legal action will continue for a minimum of 30 days, but the agency's federal regulator, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, will not allow an indefinite freeze, said CEO Stephen B. Nesmith. The pause gives RRHA time to review ledgers where a recent audit by HUD questioned some two-thirds of cases reviewed. Green said RRHA does not plan to reopen cases where tenants have already been evicted. What we know is that even with the audit, it was still a conversation between RRHA and our local HUD office to determine what was actually an error and what was not, Green said. She said rent payments, pegged at 30% of a household income, are based on documents tenants provide. If their income changes because hours are cut or they are laid off, they need to show that to RRHA in order to get their rent changed, she said. RRHA put a moratorium on rent collections during the pandemic, and while many families have been paying off arrears, some 1,500 still owe back rent, totaling $3.2 million. Nesmith said he will be presenting a stepped-up eviction prevention effort to the agency's Board of Commissioners next month. It will feature even more outreach than it has made to help tenants start paying back rent. That effort included three rounds of mass emails and text messages. She said rent payments pegged at 30% of a household income are based on documents tenants provide. And if their income changes, the RRHA will change their rent. RRHA put a moratorium on rent collections. I'm sorry, it looks like they're repeating what they've already printed. Nesmith said he will be presenting a stepped-up eviction prevention effort to the agency's Board of Commissioners next month. It will feature even more outreach than it has made to help tenants start paying back rent, and that effort included three rounds of mass emails and text messages. And again, that article on the front page about public housing, RRHA to halt evictions for at least 30 days. And it was by Dave Ress of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Steve?
Thank you, Jenny. Our next front page article is on the GI benefits case out of the Supreme Court, headlined, Justices Rule for Rudisil. Richmond veteran is elated by the outcome, by Charlotte Renee Woods of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. He fought for his country when he served in the U.S. Army. Then he became a counterterrorism agent in the FBI to help stop white supremacists from alleged plans to attack black churches and synagogues. Richmond resident James Rudisil's latest battle was to use his earned GI Bill benefits to further his education and become a chaplain. That battle took him nearly a decade and all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled 7-2 this week in his favor. Rudisil had claimed that the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs did not pay him the full benefits he had earned under two separate GI Bill programs, and that, as a result, he had to turn down an offer to attend Yale Divinity School. The legal hiccup at the core of the case is that Veterans Affairs requires people to either fully exhaust or give up their Montgomery GI Bill before requesting their benefits under the post-9/11 GI Bill. After the ruling, Rudisil says he feels validated in his quest and grateful that it can help others. I'm glad that so many other veterans will have the opportunity to benefit from the full scope of benefits that they've earned and were promised, he said. In the favorable ruling of Rudisil v. McDonough, veterans whose periods of military service overlap with different versions of the GI Bill can now be entitled to both. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote in the court's majority opinion, "The statutory text resolves this case in Rudisil's favor. Rudisil earned two separate entitlements to educational benefits, one per the Montgomery GI Bill and the other per the post-9/11 GI Bill, by serving in the military for nearly 8 years over three separate periods." Jackson later added, "Rudisil was entitled to both benefits, and he had no need to swap one set of benefits for another." Elated was a shared sentiment between Rudisil and his legal team. Their lives have been intertwined for nearly a decade amid job changes, children being born and children growing up, personal and professional conversations, and thousands of hours of combined legal work toward this victory. David DePippo, a lawyer with Dominion Energy, and Tim McHugh, now with Troutman Pepper, have been representing Rudisil pro bono over the years along with other colleagues. The case was among the first McHugh took on earlier in his career. A veteran himself, McHugh said he is grateful to have been able to work on the case and grow in his profession alongside it. He said he also utilized the GI Bill to attend college and start toward his path as a lawyer. "As a first-generation college student, let alone law student, I really internalize the importance of these benefits and know what they mean for veterans and their families," McHugh said. DePippo's family has been along for the ride and has been able to witness the composition of the nation's highest court shift over the years, such as the addition of Jackson, the first black woman to serve on the court. Misha Zaitlin, a partner with Troutman Pepper, recalled going into the court to argue Rudisill's case and encountering attorneys being sworn in at the court beforehand. And talking with people while waiting for his casework to begin, he said a few people shared that they had been in a similar benefits limbo as Rudisill. Between data from the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs for post-9/11 veterans with required service lengths, Rudisill's team surmises that over 1.7 million people nationwide may be eligible for both GI Bills. It kind of hit home, he said, of the estimated 1.7 million veterans that the case could affect. Next, Rudisill hopes to pick back up where he left off in 2015 and see if he can finally attend Yale Divinity School. Hopefully, at some point, Yale will be able to consider my application once again, he said. And in the meantime, DePippo said he is watching to see how the ruling unfolds for other veterans. Our next goal is to make sure that the VA doesn't try to figure out a way to limit the impact of this, that they give this decision its full effect, not only going forward, but going back and fixing the mistakes they made for the last 15 years, he said. And that article was GI Benefits Case, Justices Rule for Rudisill. The Richmond Veteran is Elated by the Outcome, by Charlotte Renee Woods of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Jenny?
Thank you, Steve. And our last front page article, Trump Trial Set to Start on Monday, Full Jury Seated. And it's by Jennifer Peltz, Michael R. Sizek, Jake Offenhartz, and Alana Durkin-Richer of the Associated Press. Dateline, New York. A full jury of 12 people and six alternates was seated Friday in Donald Trump's hush money case, setting the stage for opening statements next week in the first criminal trial of a former U.S. president. Hours later, an appeals court judge rejected a last-minute attempt to halt the case from Trump's lawyers, who argued that jury selection was rushed and the presumptive Republican presidential nominee cannot get a fair trial in Manhattan. Judge Juan Marchand said lawyers will present opening statements Monday morning before prosecutors begin laying out their case, alleging a scheme to cover up negative stories Trump feared would hurt his 2016 presidential campaign. Marchand expressed frustration Friday as Trump's lawyers pressed to revisit a litany of pretrial rulings. At some point, you need to accept the court's rulings, Marchand said. There's nothing else to clarify. There's nothing else to re-argue. We're going to have opening statements on Monday morning. This trial is starting. The jury, which includes a software engineer, investment banker, English teacher, and multiple lawyers, took final shape after lawyers spent days quizzing dozens of potential jurors on whether they can impartially judge Trump in the city where he built his real estate empire before being elected president in 2016. The trial thrust Trump's legal problems into the heart of his hotly contested race against President Joe Biden. Just after the jury was seated, emergency crews responded to a park outside the courthouse where a man set himself on fire. The man took out pamphlets espousing conspiracy theories and spread them around the park before dousing himself in a flammable substance and setting himself aflame, the official said. He was in critical condition Friday afternoon. Trump has spent the week sitting in the courtroom as lawyers pressed potential jurors on their views about him in a search for bias that would preclude them from hearing the case. During breaks in the proceedings, he complained about the case on social media or to TV cameras in the hallway, calling it a politically motivated witch hunt. Over 5 days of jury selection, dozens of people were dismissed from the jury pool after saying they did not believe they could be fair. Others expressed anxiety about having to decide such a consequential case without size media attention, even though the judge has ruled that jurors' names will be known only to prosecutors, Trump, and their legal teams. One woman, who was chosen to serve on the jury, was dismissed Thursday after she raised concerns over messages she said she got from friends and family when aspects of her identity became public. On Friday, another woman broke down in tears while being questioned by a prosecutor about her ability to decide the case based only on evidence presented in court. "I feel so nervous and anxious right now," the woman said. "I'm so sorry. I wouldn't want someone who feels like this to judge my case either. I don't want to waste the court's time." Trump spoke to reporters before Friday's proceedings got underway, lambasting a gag order that prosecutors have accused him of violating. Merchan has scheduled arguments for next week on prosecutors' request to hold Trump in contempt of court and fine him for social media posts they say defy limits on what he can say about potential witnesses. Merchan also heard arguments Friday on prosecutors' request to bring up Trump's prior legal entanglements if he takes the witness stand in the hush money case. Trump says he wants to testify, but he is not required to and can always change his mind. Manhattan prosecutors say they want to question Trump about his recent civil fraud trial that resulted in a $454 million judgment after a judge found Trump had lied about his wealth for years. He is appealing that verdict. Merchan said he would rule on the matter in the coming days. The trial centers on a $130,000 payment that Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer and personal fixer, made to porn actor Stormy Daniels to prevent her claims of a sexual encounter with Trump from becoming public in the final days of the 2016 race. Prosecutors say Trump obscured the true nature of the payments in internal records when his company reimbursed Cohen, who pleaded guilty to federal charges in 2018 and is expected to be a star witness for the prosecution. Trump denies having a sexual encounter with Daniels, and her lawyers claim the payments to Cohen were legitimate legal expenses. Trump faces 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. He could get up to 4 years in prison if convicted, though it's not clear that the judge would opt to put him behind bars. Trump would almost certainly appeal any conviction. Trump is involved in 4 criminal cases, but it's not clear that any others will reach trial before the November election. Appeals and legal wrangling caused delays in the other 3 cases charging Trump with plotting to overturn the 2020 election results and with illegally hoarding classified documents. And again, that last front page article, Trump trial set to start on Monday. Full jury seated, and it was by Jennifer Peltz, Michael R. Sizek, Jake Offenhartz, and Alana Durkin-Richer of the Associated Press.